Hello and welcome back to The Rusted Culture. I'm your host, Frank Ebersold, and I want to welcome you back here today on this extremely cold Iowa morning. And, oh my gosh, I can't believe how cold it is. I say that every year, but I still can't believe how cold it is. You know, I'm a Florida guy, and these consistent days of lows in the negatives and highs, sometimes barely 4 or 5 degrees, having trouble getting used to it. And it's been quite some time. It's been about 15 years. But tell your friends about us if you get a chance. Tell them they can find us real easily at www.rustedculture.com. Just go there and you'll see the podcast. And today, the reason why I've got that Ring of Fire plan, some of you might actually know the answer to this, but the reason why I've got the Ring of Fire playing is because of the Mueller investigation that we have going on. And man, that Ring of Fire just keeps getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And we're going to talk about that first, then we're going to segue into the Koch brothers are coming. And they've got some convincing that they're trying to do. And I'm going to tell you about that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about income inequality. And income inequality is one of those issues that evidently is just going to have to go on hold for this Trump administration, because it just is not going to get any better under Trump. I'm convinced. It's not going to get any better. Not going to happen. Not going to happen, George Bush would say. Remember him? 1,000 points a lie. But let's kick this thing off here, first of all, with the Mueller investigation. There's several points that I'd like to make about this. I've got about 4 points, and there's a new development, something really interesting at the end of this bit about the Mueller investigation. But the first thing is, someone directed Mike Flynn to discuss sanctions with the Russian ambassador. Now, Donald Trump claims he did not do that on February 16th by saying, "No, I did not." So he's on the record that he did not direct Mike Flynn, but I got to tell you, folks, I mean, Mike Flynn is a general, and they generally take their orders from the top. So, I got to tell you, this is my theory, but I am not, it comes as a surprise to many, but I am not believing Donald Trump when he says that he did not instruct Mike Flynn to discuss sanctions with the Russian ambassador. As this investigation unwinds, we will find the truth out on that. But the second point I'm going to make here is that Trump also claims that he did not know Mike Flynn lied to the FBI on January 24th when he fired Mike Flynn. And if you recall, Donald Trump claims that he fired Mike Flynn because he lied to the Vice President, Mike Pence. And this week, we discovered in the news that the White House counsel knew in January of 2017 that Mike Flynn probably violated the law. And this is coming from an article through foreignpolicy.com, who reported that just after Attorney General Sally Yates, remember her, she was only the Attorney General for just a little bit of time, just after Attorney General Sally Yates met with White House counsel Don McGahn on January 26th, and Sally Yates told McGahn that Mike Flynn had made statements about his conduct that we knew to be untrue. And that was Sally Yates talking to Don McGahn. I can just imagine. Don McGahn then runs over to his computer. He starts researching federal law dealing with lying to investigators and violations of the Logan Act and what that means. A day later, after he met with then Attorney General Sally Yates on January 27th, Trump has dinner with Comey at the White House, and he tries to get control of Comey when Trump asked for loyalty from James Comey at that dinner. So if you ask me, I think Trump knew Mike Flynn lied to the FBI 2 days later, occurring on January 26th. And Donald Trump started the very next day to strong-arm Comey by asking for his loyalty. And Comey said in testimony in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee in June that Donald Trump, at that White House dinner, asked him for loyalty by saying, "I need loyalty. I expect loyalty." Trump denied that statement, of course, said that it never happened. Fake reality. Well, guess what? Andrew McCabe, the FBI deputy director, has just explained to the House Intelligence Committee that, yes, indeed, James Comey told him about Donald Trump asking for loyalty shortly after they had that dinner together. And he entirely corroborated what James Comey said. So just to recap, January 24th, Mike Flynn lies to the FBI. 2 days later, January 26th, Acting Attorney General Sally Yates told White House Counsel McGahn that Flynn had lied. That same day, McGahn researches lying on his computer, presumably. Researches lying to the FBI and violations of the Logan Act. And the next day, Trump asked for loyalty from Comey. Ouch. I mean, when you line this stuff up, I think Trump knew on January 26th, folks, that Mike Flynn lied to the FBI. So when Trump asked Comey on February 14th at the White House to go easy on Flynn in that meeting in the Oval Office where he got everybody out of the Oval Office and then asked Comey to go easy on Flynn, that was obstruction of justice, folks, right there. No doubt the Mueller investigation is piecing the parts of that jigsaw puzzle together. So that first question, though, I mean, somebody directed Flynn to discuss sanctions with the Russian ambassador. And I'll be darned if it wasn't Donald Trump. I think that's going to come out. The next point I'm going to make is President Trump's legal team is already bracing for negative news from Mueller's investigation and Mike Flynn. They're already getting ready for it. Trump said, "We'll see," on a Flynn pardon when he was asked, suggesting that he may pardon Flynn, but his legal team is already planning to cast Flynn as a liar, just trying to protect himself. And that doesn't disqualify the information that's coming out of Mike Flynn, obviously, because the FBI has a very uncanny way of getting to the truth, as we know. Now, the latest bombshell, and this was kind of interesting, this just came out last night, and the latest bombshell on the Mueller investigation here is we have a jailed Russian that says he hacked the DNC on Kremlin's orders and can prove it. And that's the headline that we're getting from McClatchyDC.com. And there's a link to the article on my show notes in iTunes that you can click on to get to that article right in the show notes. And this man's name is Konstantin Kozlowski, and he said that he hacked the DNC on Kremlin's orders to steal emails released during the 2016 campaign. And then, as we know, they got released to WikiLeaks. And this man, Konstantin Kozlowski, is saying he left behind a hidden signature, or as he called it, a poison pill, during the hack, consisting of his Russian passport number and the number of his visa to visit St. Martin. And he took those two pieces of information and he put them in a hidden data file, also known as a .dat file. Wow, that's kind of interesting. So presumably this information, that .dat file, is sitting on the server. And, you know, Mueller's got access to it. Not something that I can find out, not something that you can find out. But this is certainly something that Bob Mueller and the Mueller investigation team has got access to. So this information was released in an interview with Russia's RAIN television channel that was made public, as I said, last night. And Kozlowski worked with the FSB, which is a version of the Russian intelligence agency. And get this, this is kind of interesting. So this is what these people do. And this man worked to develop computer viruses that he tested on large Russian companies before turning them loose on multinational companies. So can't you just picture that? You know, they develop a virus and they release it on Rosneft, you know, their oil company or whatnot. You know, and they just watch the impact of it. Their IT guys over there at this company probably just running around with chickens with their head cut off. And that's how they tested these viruses. They tested them on their own companies before releasing them. Man, what a life. But that's what they do, folks. That's what they do. And, you know, this is why I think I can trust the Russians as far as I can see them. You know, as long as they're in view. Not all of them. I mean, again, there's good ones out there, but I'm talking about Putin, you know, the gang. the regular suspects. So all this information is from written answers that came from jail. And they also indicate that Kozlowski worked from home and under direct supervision of a Major General Dmitry Dokuchaev. Oh, well. So, like I said, this would be hard to prove outright unless you've got access to the hacked emails on that server, which the Mueller investigation does have, of course. So, if true, this would be a big piece of the jigsaw puzzle that shows Russia's hand in the DNC email hack, who then handed the information to WikiLeaks, which I've always claimed was just another branch of the Russian intelligence service. We kind of knew that. And not really the last point. I think I said the last point was the last point, but I got another one I'm going to add in here. The Mueller investigation is zeroing in on the RNC, the Republican National Committee's Trump campaign data operation. And that whole thing sounds sort of innocuous, doesn't it? You know, what would you expect? Just a bunch of emails between campaign staffers, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the Mueller investigation is seeking to determine if the joint effort was related to Russian trolls and bots aimed at influencing American voters. So that's the first thing they're doing with the RNC and looking at that. The second thing is kind of interesting. The second thing that they're doing is the first hacker in this whole Russian hack thing when it first came out, his name was Guccifer 2.0. And the first hacker, Guccifer 2.0, released personal information that was also used to intimidate Democratic candidates in some of the most competitive congressional House races in the country. Wow. So it's not just Trump here and the presidential election. We're talking about some of the most competitive congressional races in the country. Much of this information was republished on a website called Hello FLA. Hello FLA. Leave it to the Floridians, right? And that was done by a former congressional staffer, and his name was Aaron Nevins. And Aaron Nevins, who ran this Hello FLA website, was also connected to Trump associate Roger Stone. Ugh. Gives me the eebie-jeebies. I don't think I can breathe the same air as Roger Stone. So it's no wonder, folks, that you're seeing the scum on TV that's come out of the woodwork here, up from the mud pit. You've got folks like Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida calling to call off Mueller's investigation funding. We've seen that. And we've also seen Congressman Ron DeSantis, one of my favorites. Old Ron DeSantis. You got to love old Ron. Just as a sidebar, you know, he's no fan of the Obamacare health care, as you might imagine. In one situation, he actually told a lady that was getting cancer treatment, you've got access to health care. All you have to do is go to an emergency room. I mean, this is how they think. Go to an emergency room for cancer treatment. This is what they think. This is how they think, folks. So you've got Matt Gaetz. You've got this guy, Ron DeSantis, Congressman Ron DeSantis. And then you've also got this another one that just bubbled up from the mud pit. His name is Looney Rooney. Congressman Francis Rooney, all over Fox News and CNN and every place he could get a little airtime, babbling on about how we need to purge the FBI, for God's sakes. And what a crock of BS that is. And then if you go to the website Salon.com, and Salon.com reports that Congressman Ron DeSantis directly benefited from Guccifer 2.0's leak to Aaron Nevins. What do you think of that? I mean, he directly benefited from that information from Guccifer 2.0 that then got handed to Aaron Nevins. After Nevins published five dark documents regarding the Democratic Committee's recruitment of DeSantis's Democratic opponent, George Pappas. So in this congressional race, there were five documents that Aaron Nevins published that strongly benefited Ron DeSantis against, in his campaign against the Democratic opponent, George Pappas. So folks, this Russian hack and this attempt to fix the election here just doesn't refer to Donald Trump. The info was used for some key elections and some very tight races across the nation. So the scope, and Mueller's fully aware of this, the scope is widening. And sorry, Mr. Trump, I don't think the Mueller investigation is going to wrap up by January 1st. I'm sad to say. In another creative use of this hacked Guccifer 2.0 information, though, the National Republican Campaign Committee and a second Republican group, which they didn't name, but they did say that this second Republican group has got ties to House Speaker Paul Ryan, they also turned to the hacked material to undermine Miami Democrat Joe Garcia and the race that he was facing between incumbent Congressman Carlos Curbelo. So this information, this hacked information, was also used to sway that race. Man, they got it all going on, don't they? Man, they think they got it going on. So this is why all these Florida nasty congressmen are trying to discredit the Mueller investigation. They're doing it for a reason, folks. And they're calling for a purge of the FBI because they know what's coming. They know. And you know, you talk about a purge. We need to purge Looney Rooney, Ron DeSantis, and Carlos Curbelo, and Matt Gaetz. Kick them all out of office for using hacked information for Russia to win their election, to help win their election. Kick them out. And if there's going to be a purge, folks, those are the ones that should go. It's not the FBI. It's not the FBI. And talking about this FBI purge and some of the crap that we're hearing in the news, here's Senator Jeff Flake from Arizona. Have a listen to this.
And if the president continues to try to, you know, undermine the legitimacy of that investigation, and if Republicans continue to try to help with that, I think that puts us in peril.
And I want you to take that little piece from Jeff Flake, and I want you to contrast that with Rand Paul's comment. Listen to Rand Paul, the nutcake here.
We've had this investigation about Russian collusion. Maybe we need an investigation about high-ranking Obama officials colluding to try to prevent Trump from being president. That's more serious than even Watergate.
Obama officials, how about that? Little spineless, oh God, I don't know. It's like a jellyfish. He's got no spine. How about the Obama officials? You know, this is what they do. It's a common theme, folks. And the Republicans are all doing it, and they learned it from Trump. What they do is they distract, or they outright lie. Then they sit there and they deny, deny, deny. Then they denigrate, denigrate, denigrate. And then they dismiss, dismiss, dismiss. It's the four Ds. They distract, deny, denigrate, and dismiss. If you've got that formula, you can just call it a little board game. You can play it at home with the kids. Distract, deny, denigrate, dismiss. We actually played that over the holiday. It was kind of fun. Give it a try sometime. So that's the formula that they're applying to just about everything. And you know, maybe if Trump just spent a little bit less time golfing. You know, in fact, he spent about 33% of his time at his own resorts. And he's played more golf than Obama did over his entire 8-year presidency, folks. You know, he tries, Donald Trump, this is so funny, he tries so hard not to let anyone see him play golf. I don't know what it is. Self-conscious, big booty, I don't know what the hell it is. But last Monday, there's a big white box truck that kept moving to block the CNN cameras crew of Donald Trump playing golf. They'd set up, the truck would move in. They'd move over a little bit, they'd get him through the weeds because he doesn't want you to see him playing golf, God forbid, then the truck would move. You know, maybe if he just put the fake clubs on his down on his fake vacations, he just might get a little bit more of America's work done. For God's sakes. Well, folks, stay right there. We've got some interesting stuff here. The Koch brothers are coming. The Koch brothers are coming. Stay right there. Well, we've got some interesting information here, and I do have an article bit that I've published on my show notes if you want to read this article about the Koch brothers are coming. And this is from an article by Politico is reporting this, and you need to get ready for it. And I think this morning over my coffee, I just about gagged when I saw the commercial myself. But they're starting to put a lot more TV time into promoting Donald Trump. And why? I mean, I've never seen this, you know. Thank you, Donald Trump. Thank you, Donald Trump. God. I mean, the man has such low ratings. I mean, this is not going to help. And what we've got here is this, by Politico, this article. Conservative groups are planning a multi-million dollar effort to sell the GOP's tax cut law. They're trying to push this on Americans, hoping that the American electorate can learn to love the party's signature but massively unpopular legislative achievement, according to this article. And they quote the guy here that is saying, we have a public that distrusts anything coming out of Washington, especially anything from the majority party, said Tim Phillips, president of Americans for Prosperity, which is the grassroots organizing arm of the powerful Koch brothers network of conservative groups, according to this article. And he goes on to say that we have a job that's not that hard. We just have to make sure people understand the benefits we're going to receive from this legislation. You're going to have to work a little bit harder than that at it, because this just benefits the rich, and we all know it. But the Koch network is going to launch a multi-million dollar push next year to start selling the bill with paid advertising and town halls all over the place. I'd like to be at one of those, wouldn't you? All to educate voters. And a major GOP super PAC is planning to spend $10 million along with that to protect House members. And we've got another PAC here that's called the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. How does that sound? Committee to Unleash Prosperity. They plan to spend the majority of its $1 million annual budget selling the tax planning to folks like you and me next year, according to one of the group's founders. His name is Stephen Moore, a distinguished visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation, as they say here. Bunch of BS. We don't want those ads. And to say that the article says here that they're quoting that the bill sells itself, and the committee tends to focus its efforts on selling the advantages of the tax bill to Americans. And they're saying, right now, Americans think it's a tax increase instead of a tax cut. We're not that stupid. We know it's a tax cut, for God's sakes. Get your head out of your darn arse. We know that it's a tax cut, but it's not going to benefit the middle class. It's going to benefit the rich. Well, I mean, how detached can you be to think that it's a tax increase? Nobody, I mean, come on. See, this is what they think about the public out there. They put this crap out. They think they have to educate you, and it's propaganda is what it comes down to. It's all propaganda, folks, and don't fall for it, as I know you won't. But this fellow goes on to say that when they start to see what happens in their paychecks and how the economy responds, they're going to change their minds. Well, good luck with that. You know, good luck with that. Nobody's going to change their damn mind when they see their paycheck. They see the fact that this was a tax cut for the rich and the rich are benefiting. I mean, that's a fact. It's not a fake reality. And that brings us into income inequality, folks. And talking about this tax cut, even Donald Trump, did you see this? I mean, you talk about sickening. Even Donald Trump admits that the tax cut is for the rich. And if this does not just make your stomach crawl here, last Friday night at Mar-a-Lago, President Donald Trump told friends at dinner, "You all just got a lot richer." Oh, God. And that was according to a CBS report. And, oh. It's not a tax cut, folks. It's a tax cut fake-out is what it is. You know, it's a tax cut fake-out. I mean, this is the gall to sit there at that table with his rich friends and tell him, "You all just got a lot richer," when he's out there selling it to everybody else as a middle-class tax cut. I mean, that's BS. I'm sick of it. That guy's nuts. And they just don't get it, folks. You know, and if they cared, they would do something like raise the minimum wage. Which, by the way, let's go back to 1968. The minimum wage back in 1968 was a big old whopping $1.60 an hour. but that equates to $10.71 in 2013 dollars. In 2013 dollars, it was $10. That would equate to $10.71. And as you know, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. And of the 29 states that are actually above that rate of $7.25 an hour, only seven, count them, only seven, have a state-mandated minimum wage of between $10 and $11.50 an hour. There's only seven. And according to Pew Research, about 20.6 million people are near minimum wage workers. So it doesn't take a genius here, folks. By raising the minimum wage to something higher than what it is right now, get it up there around $12 to $15 an hour, you're putting millions more in the hands of workers. Millions more. And that also brings me into another article here, and this one's by Washington Post. And I've also got a link on my show notes to the article, so if you want to just go to the description in iTunes, you can click on that and get a view of this article. It's a well-written article, but it talks about how ex-employees of McDonnell Douglas were basically left stranded, who thought they might have had a pension coming after years and years of work. And it highlights how we need a minimum wage increase for senior workers who are some of the first now to start retiring without pensions. We're just starting to get this flow of people that are retiring now without pensions. And this is what it's like for them. This article goes into strong detail about it. And minimum wage just isn't about young workers, you know, and starting workers. It's actually what's paying the bills for some of these folks that are now retiring, these old folks, older folks, who are retiring without pensions. And the story talks about, I'm just going to give you some of the highlights. It talks about Laverne Combs, who's 73. She works the midnight shift loading trucks for a company that delivers for Amazon. You've got Ruby Oakley. She's 74. She's a crossing guard. A man by the name of Charles Glover, he's 70, and he's a cashier at the Dollar General. A man by the name of Willie Sells, 74, is a barber. And, you know, folks like this, if you look at the Ruby Oakley, who's 74, she's a crossing guard. She's working at an elementary school, and she's supplementing her Social Security, and she's earning $7 an hour. And she calls it chump change. She knows that. She's told local officials that they should pay better, and she says, I use it for gas money. I like the people, but we have to get out there in traffic, and the people at the city think they're doing it. They're doing the senior citizens a favor by letting them do work like this. $7 an hour. We expect a 74-year-old to get out there in traffic and do this every day. And again, she enjoys doing it, but for right around $7 an hour. I mean, this is the problem that we're facing. So income inequality is running right up the list. It's not just the people that are just starting out work. It's going all the way up into these retirees now that don't have pensions. And according to the Washington Post, they do great reporting. And they've acquired a list of 998 employees that worked at McDonnell Douglas. They reviewed public records, and they interviewed more than 25 of these people. And of those 25, they've all found some kind of work to do. But all but a handful of these people, this 20 group of 25 that they were able to get, they all but a handful said that their new wages were only about half of what they'd been making. And typically their pay dropped in half from about $20 an hour working at McDonnell Douglas to $10 an hour. And they had some pretty good days in the early 90s working with McDonnell Douglas. They had something known as 30 and out. Employees with 30 years on the job could retire with full pension once they reached age 55. And the article goes on to talk here about how the people at McDonnell Douglas actually looked at the amount of pensions that they were about to have to pay out to these people that had worked there, again, decades. And they used that information on the pensions that these folks were going to collect in the decision to close the plant. And the employees brought a case. They were represented by attorneys that that showed that the company had tracked pension savings in its decision to close. So they did get a little bit of money out of this, but it was a pittance. I mean, the fact that they're working these minimum wage jobs in their 70s, folks, is showing you that they didn't get much. And, you know, nowadays, what they're doing is in place of pensions, companies and investment advisors, they're urging employees to open retirement accounts. And the idea is that workers will manage their own retirement funds with a little help from their employers or an advisor, something like that. But in many cases, when something critical happens in the family, these 401ks get drawn down to help pay for that. And we know that happens time and time again. It's life without pensions. And let's face it, folks, you know, Social Security, which Donald Trump is trying to threaten as we speak. And that's something we're going to have to fight against coming up this next year, is the threat to Social Security, the threat to Medicare, the threat to Medicaid. Because he's passed this massive tax cut, they've got to make up the money, and they're going to paint these programs as big cost centers that need to be cut. And most folks only make about $14,000 a year on Social Security. So, oh, it's just another thing not to like about this Republican administration. And their fake version of reality. They just don't know what it's like to sit there at the table and tell his rich friends that they all just got a lot richer. Makes you sick. But folks, I want to thank you for listening to the Rusted Culture podcast today. This version of the Ring of Fire is from a band that's interesting. It's called Obardo Eo Banjo. Obardo Eo Banjo. And it's a Brazilian band. And version of Ring of Fire by a Brazilian band is just, I don't know, it's interesting. I've never heard anything like it. So you can find their music on iTunes. Go out there and check it out and listen. And by all means, tell your friends also that they can find us here easily at just going to www.rustedculture.com. And tell them to give us a listen. And you can always review us too while you're out there. That helps tremendously. Until next time, folks, I want to thank you for joining the Rusted Culture. I'm Frank Ebersold, and here's Obardo Eo Banjo. Have a listen.
Our love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I feel for you like a shy.